Okay, good morning, everyone. Beautiful morning. I am coming to you from the road. I'm actually on my way back to Montreal from Portland, Maine. I was able to spend some time there last night at the Maine Jewish Museum, which is an amazing place, actually. It's something that I think other small Jewish communities should think about. There was this old, over 100 years old, beautiful synagogue that was in disrepair, and they renovated it completely, restored it, and turned it into a museum. Well, it's a functional synagogue and a museum. And it's really amazing, this kind of overlay of museum and synagogue, where you like it looks, you walk in, and it definitely they have exhibits and it looks like a museum. And then upstairs is the main sanctuary and this beautiful old, so it's kind of like Jewish history upon Jewish history, and they have a main Jewish Hall of Fame there, and they have a beautiful exhibit for the local Holocaust survivors who lived in Maine. And last night, I did an event for them on Israeli and kosher wine, and beautiful, beautiful turnout, and really amazing food and wine, and I was able to really share kosher wine and what's happened to the kosher industry and the wine world, as many of you know that I'm quite knowledgeable of that. And so, but it was nice to really spend time with this. And this was the first time. It was the first time that the main Jewish community ever had an event on kosher or Israeli wine before Passover. Obviously, is the right time. And of course, they booked this with me about 6 months ago, and I was like, eh, it's not a big deal. But now the 10 days before Passover, I was like, what the heck am I doing? And I don't have the time for this, but I was happy that I was really happy to share, and it was really beautiful that what I thought I would do today is I thought I would shed some Kabbalah slash meaningful light on the Seder. So for many of us, the Seder is an event that we do. And I would say as the years go on, we want to do it as fast as possible. We want to get to the food as fast as possible. And it's kind of this thing that, yeah, what do? It's Passover night. We're going to do a Seder, blah, blah, blah. I want to try to change that. I want to try to see if we can reclaim the tradition of Passover. And I'll do some of it today, and maybe I won't finish it today, and we'll be able to finish it next week as well. So, and as well as that, I'm also doing an event on Wednesday night next week, and I'm hoping probably one other night I'm going to do some other pre-Passover events, and I'll let you know about them. But Wednesday night, the 17th, is already booked, so 8 o'clock Eastern time, on this channel right here. Just so you know, and I'm going to be talking about how to host a meaningful Seder. But this is a little different. I want to today talk about reclaiming the Seder. What I mean by reclaiming the Seder is for so many of us, we've lost the beauty of it. So what is the Seder? The Seder tells a story that happened over 3,300 years ago. The Jewish people were enslaved in Egypt. The Israelites, who were they? They were all the children of Jacob, Abraham, Isaac, Abraham and Sarah have Isaac, who marries Rebekah. Isaac and Rebekah have Jacob, who later is turned, his name is turned to Israel, has 12 children or 13 children with, and they all of Jacob and his descendants go down to Egypt because of a famine. There's 70 of them when they get down. And as the years go on, they're there for a number of hundreds of years, and they are enslaved. This is the first time in recorded history that a nation enslaved another nation. An entire, think about it. Just think about just the entire United States being enslaved by some nation that came. And so since then, there have been slaves. What's fascinating to me is that since that moment of enslavement and freedom, every single peoples that have ever been enslaved have looked at us, at our story, as the symbol of being enslaved and freed in a single generation. There's a black preacher in Memphis, Tennessee, 1967. It was a rainy, cold night. He was sick with the flu and sent his friend ahead of him. And he said, you go talk to them. But Charles Abernathy gets there and they don't want to speak to him. They want the real deal. And he calls him up from a payphone and he says, Martin, get your tuchus over here. And he gets up and he gets there and he stands up there in front of thousands and thousands of people and shares one of the most iconic addresses of all time, the mountaintop address, where he quotes Moses and the Israelites. And I've always thought about that moment. Some black preacher in the 60s. I am sure there are wonderful, wonderful people within the black community that he could have quoted. Why are you misappropriating our story? Find your own story. And as the years have gone on and I've thought about that iconic address from Martin Luther King Jr., I think that our story has proved to the world that you can be enslaved and freed in a single generation. And so every other peoples that have ever been enslaved have looked at our story as a symbol of hope, as a symbol of opportunity. Every other peoples, including the black community. And who would imagine that 50 years after that address, there was a black president of the United States. And so our story proves once again in our own lifetime the power of the Egyptian enslavement and the freedom, the power of Passover. So what do we do on Passover? Let's just strip it to its bare bones. On Passover, we are to gather our family. Also, we have this passage, whoever is hungry, let them come and eat. So you gather your family, you gather people around you, and whoever else is hungry. One of the things that I love about weddings in the Jewish community, I've been to many weddings in Crown Heights, in Brooklyn, and this is reminiscent of the shtetl as well, of the old country. There was always a table for those who were hungry, that weren't invited. The people of the community who needed a meal for the night were able to show up, and they, to this day, if you go to Brooklyn, many weddings, there are people who are hungry that will just show up, and there's a table that's set aside for them that they can eat at a wedding. And so that's also reminiscent of our tradition of Passover, that whoever's hungry, that they come and eat. So we're gathering our family, we're gathering friends, we're gathering people who are hungry. And our job on Passover night is to do three things: to eat matzah, to eat maror,
Are you tired of swiping right on every dating app out there and still getting nowhere?
Are you convinced that you'll forever be alone, surrounded by nothing but cats and empty takeout containers?
Hi, I'm Aliza Ben Shalom, the host of the new show, Jewish Matchmaking, which you can find on Netflix.
And I'm the love rabbi, Rabbi Yisrael Bernath, and we're inviting you to join us for Matchmaker Matchmaker.
Each week, we'll answer one of your pressing relationship questions, from how to get over your ex to how to deal with your partner's annoying habits.
So if you're ready to laugh, cry, or maybe even find love, then tune in to Matchmaker Matchmaker, and it's available now wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And to tell our children the story that happened to us when we left Egypt. Now, I don't know about you. I've never been to Egypt. I don't plan on going to Egypt. So I didn't go to Egypt and I didn't leave Egypt. And I'm not a liar. So how am I going to tell my children the story that happened to me when I left Egypt if I've never been there? So there's a practical So there's a practical element of this. The practical is that that is our job at Passover. Our job is to tell the story in the present tense. And we say in the Haggadah, if God would not have freed us, then we would still be slaves, our children, our grandchildren, that slavery could never end if there's not a stop to it. And it's interesting, in the narrative, we have to tell it in the present sense. Kabbalistically, we get around that by explaining that everyone has a slavery. We are all enslaved to something. Also, Kabbalah says Mitzrayim, which is the Hebrew for Egypt, is Mesar Garim, means limited, that we're all limited by our thoughts, that we in our own minds limit our potential, and that the story of freedom, what is freedom? Freedom is truly being thinking beyond and not limiting ourselves, but to be more expansive in our thoughts. To me, to look up, right? Like I was talking about the incredible eclipse, just that moment of totality where all of us together are looking up together, unity and hope. That has been such a symbol of the Jewish people for time and millennia. That symbol of looking up together, that unity and hope. This is what Passover is about. We so often get into our box and in our small-mindedness and our thinking and our narrowness and know this is not possible. It's never going to happen. Passover is anything is possible. There was no way we were leaving Egypt. We weren't there for a year. We were in Egypt for 210 years. All peoples enslaved to Pharaoh. And then we left. We didn't only leave. We left with the riches of Egypt. And every single year since then, we have sat around the table and we've told the story in the present tense. It is the most celebrated Jewish holiday, the most celebrated. There are other holidays that are popular. There are other holidays that are important. But Passover stands on its own as the most celebrated holiday. I mean, the point is that even Hanukkah, they're going to have matzah in the kosher aisle in most supermarkets. That's how celebrated it is. And Hanukkah was never popular. It's only popular in North America because of the time of year it is. But historically, it was not a popular Jewish holiday. The most popular Jewish holiday was always Passover. For 3,300 years plus, we have sat around the table telling the story to our children. Now, the Passover Seder is supposed to be a typical night in a Jewish home. It's supposed to be just a typical night. So let's think about what a typical night is. Okay, maybe not totally typical because we have matzah instead of bread. On a regular night, we're breaking bread. Here we're breaking matzah. And that's because of matzah is a symbol of humility, right? Bread rises. That's the nature of bread, is to rise. Matzah is a flat cracker. So one of the traditions of Passover, of sharing Passover, is a tradition of humility. And that's something we can talk about, hopefully, on a separate occasion. What else? The entire Passover Seder is surrounded around one thing. We do insane traditions, some of them that even as adults baffle our minds, for one reason and one reason only. So the children will ask questions to incite questioning within the child's mind, so that the child will be observant, will observe and say, "Mom, why do we do this?" And the mother can say, "We do this because da 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 da, and God took me out of Egypt, and God could take you out of Egypt too." The entire evening is for critical and independent thought. That's what it's all about. I think about Isidore Isaac Rabi, the famous physicist that won the Nobel Prize in the 60s. And when he was interviewed for winning the Nobel Prize, they asked him, they said, "You're a child of immigrants." He was Jewish. "You're a child of immigrants. How did a child of immigrants come to win the Nobel Prize. Now, I think this is also amazing about the United States, about meritocracy and the ability to really come to the U.S. and pave your own way, that a child of immigrants can win a Nobel Prize. But aside from that, how did Isidore Isaac Rabi win a Nobel Prize, they asked him. And he said, while most children come home from school and their parents say, how was your day, if they do at all? Did you have fun today? My mother, he said, in her native Yiddish, every single day when I would come home from school as a child, would turn to me and say, Isidore, in Yiddish, was gefragt a gute Kasche heint? Isidore, did you ask any good questions today? And he said, that independent thought, that constantly I had to answer my mother. She wanted to know what questions I asked that day. Teaching our child to ask, teaching our child to be inquisitive. There are so many religions, and I think that in general, if you asked the average person today about religion, they will tell you, oh, religion, you just do what you're told. Don't ask questions. It's possible that that's how some religions are. I don't know. But in Judaism, we not only honor and value asking questions, it is the basis of all of our tradition. I spent 10 years in yeshiva, in rabbinical school. Majority of that time in critical thought, asking questions. It's amazing how embedded into our people. And then when we start asking difficult questions in the world says, you don't have to know that. Don't ask that. What do you mean don't ask that? Our entire lives, you're not going to take that out of us. It's part of our DNA. We have a holiday where we sit around the table and the entire holiday is about asking questions. It's called Passover, the Seder. That's it. So what does that mean? If you have a Seder this year, remember one most important. Doesn't take long. You make a blessing on the matzah, and you honor matzah, you honor humility, you honor the power and the tradition of the matzah. I recommend Shmura matzah. If you can get the special handmade matzah, that would be even greater. Just for the Seder itself, that's the Passover. You can get your box of matzah from Trader Joe's or wherever you're getting it. I saw Trader Joe's this year has their own branded matzah. Unbelievable. What has it become? What have we become? We're not that much of a people. We're not that big of a people. I don't know who's buying that matzah, but when I start seeing stores having their own branded matzah, I was at Trader Joe's in Portland yesterday. I couldn't believe it. Eat maror, but then most of all, put together lists of questions. And spend the evening. The Seder, we'll talk about the Seder. But sometimes we get so caught up in having to do the Seder that we miss the point of it. The point of the Seder is to create an environment where you first, and your guests, and your family, and those who are celebrating with you, can ask questions. So sometimes today, you're going to have four different types of people. The Seder talks about them. You're going to have the child that's very inquisitive. You have a child that doesn't care, that's rebellious. You have a child who you have to make it to answer ask very simple questions. And a child who doesn't even know how to ask. Even the Seder's talking about it. So I would say, the Rebbe would say there's even a fifth child, which is a child that you should think about. The child who doesn't know that tonight is Passover. And if you know someone in your life who doesn't know that tonight is Passover, you should tell them that tonight is Passover and invite them to your Seder. You should have at least after the Holocaust, there was a conversation in 1946, 47, by the major Jewish communities in the world about leaving a chair empty at the Seder. For those who 6 million who had perished in the Holocaust. And the Rebbe was really upset about this idea of leaving a chair empty. The Rebbe was very, very upset about the idea of leaving a chair empty and said, why are we leaving a chair empty? We should fill it with somebody who doesn't have a Seder. There are so many people tonight who have no idea that it's a Seder. So we should make sure that in memory of those who perished, that somebody fills that seat. Don't leave it empty. And I think that if I can use the Rebbe's example in today, where the past 6 months, we've lost so many because of this horrific, horrific war. And maybe there's a thought this year of leaving a chair empty because you want to remember a hostage. And I do think that it's wonderful if you want to bring the names of one of the hostages or two of the hostages to your Seder and talk about those people who are still stuck in, 133 of them that are still stuck in Gaza, who can't have a Seder this year, and think about them. But I would say instead of having just having their name and thinking about them, also find someone who doesn't have a Seder and have that person fill that seat. And that's a wonderful way to honor the hostages. And that's a wonderful way to honor those who have fallen in Israel. So this year, if I can encourage you, if I can try to re-inspire Passover, I would say, find someone to fill a seat. And then create a list of questions. Questions that matter to you. It could be things that matter about Passover or things that matter about the Jewish community in general. Have conversation, inspire conversation. Have, as a result, you can have a little paper that you put at each plate with a question and maybe even a question and answer. Just something that will inspire conversation around the table. And so that instead of doing this kind of Seder that has just become maybe something that we're trying to get through as fast as possible, absent-minded recitations, we can actually fill our Seder with meaning. I'll give you an example. Okay, I'll start actually because I want to continue next week as well. I want to go through each of the steps of the Seder and talk about and ask a question. I'm also going to do it every single day on my Daily Jewish Thought podcast. Every single day between today and Passover, I'm going to try to do a 4 or 5 or 6 minute little idea where I ask a question about Passover and answer it. And I want to give you as much content as I can to be able to create a meaningful Pesach experience. So how do we start the Seder? Let's get started with that. How do we start the Seder? We start the Seder by with the Kaddish is the first, the sanctification of wine. Wine is a central part of our Seder experience. Random fact, 60% of all kosher wine is sold before Passover. Passover and Seders and this time of year accounts for most of kosher wine sales. And I'm always fascinated about wine, and I think about wine, and I ask, why is it wine that has become the primary ingredient of all of our celebrations? If you have a Jewish celebration, from a wedding to a bris, to every Shabbat, to a holiday, there's going to be some kind of sanctification of wine in that holiday, in that Shabbos, in that celebration. There was even the Talmud that we were studying recently was talking about even within there was rituals that had to do with the Jewish death practices that also included wine, and that's how the word l'chaim came out. Why do we say l'chaim? We say l'chaim when we drink wine to life, v'lo l'mavet and not to death, to separate that we want to celebrate life and not the opposite. That's the traditional, right? When you raise your glass in Judaism, the traditional saying is l'chaim, to life. Why to life? I mean, it's beautiful to celebrate life, but why specifically to life? And there was a practice that the Talmud talks about having to do with that wine was used for the opposite of life. So we start by declaring these 15 steps, and we're stuck by a question about the order of events. The first two events of the Seder are the Kaddish, the wine, and the Orchatz. What does that mean? It means to sanctify and to wash. Now, this is referring to making the Kiddush and then washing hands. We sanctify the wine and then we wash our hands. But if the order, because Seder actually means order, so if the order of things is significant, it seems to me that here, and I know I'm nitpicking a bit, but it seems to be in reverse. We should wash our hands before we sanctify ourselves or bless. How can you reach holiness if you're filthy? How can you expect to enter a sacred space if you're still dirty with sin? So if you think about it, just in the Seder, if you really want to make order out of this chaos, you should wash yourself of any muck, and then you can start to sanctify, and then you can start to become holy. And I think here is lesson number one of the Seder. Was one meaning, and I'm sure if you discussed it, you probably could find many other meanings to this. You don't need to fix your problems before you can approach holiness. You don't need to be a pure person before you can do a mitzvah. Just jump right in. Pesach, the holiday of Pesach, means passing over. It means taking a leap. If you wait until you're worthy before you do a mitzvah, you may wait forever. The world can't wait, especially today. The world needs your mitzvah now. So what are we saying right at the beginning of the Seder? Do something holy right now. And then afterwards, you can wash off the muck. There was a Hasidic prankster. His name was Rabbi Naftali of Rupshitz. And he had an interesting custom. He would always cut his fingernails after immersing in the mikvah on Friday afternoon. There's a tradition of men to, before Shabbat, to immerse in a mikvah. And the more common custom, especially before Shabbat, is to cut the fingernails before going to the mikvah. It's part of becoming clean before Shabbat. And so one of Rabbi Naftali's students questioned his master on the reversal of the usual order. And so Rabbi Naftali said, the answer of my reversal is the answer to your question, it's too deep for you to understand. So the student says, try me. It's no, he says. It's a mystical secret. I can't share it with you. He says, please, Rebbe, I truly desire to learn the secrets. He says, well, okay, I'll make you a deal. I will teach you the secret of the cutting of the fingernails. But if you really want to be worthy of knowing the secret, you have to fast for 40 days and then come back to me. The student was so curious, so he decides to take upon himself 40 days of fasting. The whole time he wondered, what could be the secret of cutting the fingernails after them going to the mikvah and not before going to the mikvah? Well, what's the mystery behind this holy practice? At the end of the 40 days, he returns to the rabbi and he says, okay, I'm done. I've fasted for 40 days. Now, please reveal to me the hidden meaning of the cutting of the fingernails after immersing in the mikvah. Rabbi Naftali brings the student into his private study. He sits him down and he closes his eyes and he says, the reason for cutting nails after the mikvah is then they're much softer and easier to cut. The student's eyes lit up. He knew his master, and he knew that behind his jokes and pranks, there's profound teachings. And I think there lays here a deep secret. These two pre-Shabbat rituals, the cutting of the nails and the immersing in the mikvah, they symbolize two different acts of self-refinement. Fingernails represent the sharpness, the negativity in our character that may cause hurt to others. Cutting the nails is the smoothening out of the rough edges in our character, ridding ourselves of our bad traits. Immersing in the mikvah represents elevating ourselves to a more pure, to a more sanctified state, surrounding ourselves in holy water and stepping up to a higher state of being. The usual order is to cut the nails and then immerse in the mikvah. You first have to rid yourself of evil before you can step higher onto the ladder of holiness. But Rabbi Naftali here taught that sometimes you need to do things the other way around. You have to immerse yourself in holiness first. Do something good. Surround yourself with purity. And even if you haven't yet dealt with the flaws in your character, you can get back to that later. And your job will be easier because once you've tasted holiness, you won't want to go to the opposite of holiness anymore. So the mikvah softens your nails and makes them easier to cut. I think, and here's my first teaching of the Seder experience, I think that maybe there's those who think, I'm not holy enough to experience Passover. I'm not holy enough to sit at a Seder. I know what I did last night. I know what I did last week. I know my own feelings, my vices, my weaknesses. Can I really show my face before God? Say the prayers, sing the songs like a nice person, a good person, a holy person. That's what the Seder is. The Seder starts off, become holy right away. You can wash away the bad later. The bad will come off later. But now, become holy right away. And so, if I can just kind of summarize the main points of what I wanted to get to today, as you think about Passover, and we spend so much time, you know, if I can say spring cleaning, it's not spring cleaning. We get so stuck up on the cleaning and on the preparation that when it comes there, we're actually not in a spiritual and emotional state to experience it. So I want us to reclaim the Passover experience. The point of Passover is to eat matzah, to eat maror, and to ask questions and to have discussion and to sit around. It's very easy. Everybody gets together and we can sit around and talk politics, and we can sit around and we can talk something else, and we can talk nothing at all. If I can encourage you, A, to have a Seder, B, to invite people maybe who wouldn't have a Seder, and then when you're eating your matzah and maror, to also sit around and try to, in advance, and again, I said I'm going to help you with this, is ask these questions and help create critical and independent thoughts. Something that, you know, I've said this so many times, something that we need so much in our world today, critical and independent thought. And this Passover, I think this is more than ever, this is what we have to do. And it's not going to happen by itself. We have to plan it out. You may need to put a page in front of each plate with a question, with a prompt. I think that's what we have to do, create prompts for our Seder so that everybody has something to think about. And from those prompts, it will elicit conversation. Anyway, I wanted to put that in your mind, and I want you to think about that, and you can marinate on that and mull over it, and we can talk about it. We have still 10 days left. It's more than enough time to be able to put together a beautiful and meaningful Seder. Like I said, I'm going to talk about this further on Wednesday night, right here, same place, same channel. And I'm going to talk about it again next Thursday morning as well. We'll continue talking. So if you have anything that comes up between then that you want me to address specifically, if you have a question that you want me to address, please reach out to me. You know all my various ways of reaching out. I try to be as easy as possible to reach out to, though sometimes I don't answer because I get overwhelmed, but But most of the time, especially this, if you have particular things you want me to cover, I'm happy to do that. For those of you who are just listening after the fact, we wish you a wonderful day and a wonderful week. And for the rest of us, let's go into questions, comments, and golden nuggets.
Hi, Rabbi Bernath here. I have some great news for you. My popular 4-week course, Kabbalah for Everyone, is available right now for free for the next 50 people who download it. All you have to do is go to www.theloverabbi.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and you're going to see the download button right there. In this course, I talk about the Kabbalistic secrets to relationships, to wealth, to happiness, and balance. This special offer has been dedicated in loving memory of Elie Dorfman. I look forward to hearing from you and hope you enjoy the course. Now on to today's episode.